Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe.
And I'm Sue Bird.
We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show.
A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
This episode of Vegas Nation is brought to you by STN Sports from Station Casinos. STN Sports is the only sports betting app you need this season. Sign up today and get a new sign-up bonus for up to $50.
We are excited to know where we're going to be playing. And excited to have a city that is excited about having us.
Once you're a Raider, you're always a Raider, no matter what city.
We are now the Las Vegas Raiders.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to a special episode of the Vegas Nation podcast brought to you by Favor. Drink of Favor.com. You can keep up with everything happening here at Vegas Nation on VegasNation.com. Download our app as well and also follow everyone here on social media. We are joined today by Ed Graney and Rick Velotta. You can find them at Ed Graney and at Rick Velotta on Twitter. And the show will be at Vegas Nation. I'm your host, Heidi Fang. And I want to also remind everybody here to subscribe wherever you are listening and check out our latest podcasts that are coming up here with the Review Journal. We have a special episode, true crime-based podcast called Mobbed Up, reliving the history of what went down in Las Vegas with the mafia back when. So that is going to be a special edition that you will want to check out for sure. Mobbed Up, again, brought to you by the Review Journal here. And all the other great podcasts that we produce, you can find at reviewjournal.com/podcast. So we have here, again, as I mentioned before, Ed Graney and Rick Velotta joining us, and we're going to be breaking down everything happening right now at Allegiant Stadium, the future home of the Raiders and UNLV. First, let's get into what they're calling the fourth quarter, Rick. They held a meeting yesterday for the first time in 126 days. We're about 71 days out, if my math is right, to the substantial completion date being July 31st. As of right now, with them calling this the fourth quarter, there's still a lot of work that has to be done. Things have carried on here despite the COVID cases that have happened at the stadium. Unfortunately, there have been at least, I believe you reported, 16 cases of the virus on site, yet everyone is carrying on trying to get this done. What at this point needs to happen at the stadium to be sure that they meet that July 31st date?
Well, there's still plenty of things that that have to be completed. And a lot of this is just the type of stuff you would do on any major construction project. And incidentally, this is just incredible that they have been able to keep on schedule with all this coronavirus. Our lives have changed so dramatically, but yet they're still looking at getting it done by July 31st. So what's left to do? They've got some sports equipment installation. We're talking about some of the things that you would see around a regular stadium. That's supposed to be done by the 12th of June. There's still some seat installation that needs to happen. About half of it's already in, even a little bit more than half of it's already in. They want to complete that by June the 26th. Now, the elevators and escalators need to be tested. Now, they're installed, but they need to have county officials come out and do some testing before they can actually put them into service. And then there's some drywall and interior finishes that need to be happen in some of the luxury boxes. That's all supposed to be done by July the 8th.
All right. So I'm curious also, there were some things that were needing to be worked out with UNLV as far as scheduling, and they've actually come to an agreement on those dates. Rick, can you walk us through what the agreements are right now in place with UNLV and how many games they're going to have there that take place at the stadium? And the opponents also, I believe they're facing Arizona State. There is one of the games, and is Louisiana Tech, I think, the other. I'm sorry.
You know, the big one is Cal. University of California will be here at the end of August. And all along, the UNLV has tried to get as many games as they can. They were in kind of a conundrum because they went ahead and scheduled a lot of these games a long time ago. As you know, all of this scheduling has to occur many years in advance. And so they already made some plans to bring in Cal, Arizona State, and Louisiana Tech as their non-conference games. Conference games are safe. There's no problem with that. They have been scheduled in, and they'll be in that full conference, Mountain West Conference schedule will be played inside. The question marks were with the non-conference games. Now, because Allegiant Stadium is brand new, the operators wanted to showcase it on a number of different things. So they wanted to have special events, concerts, that type of thing. And they prohibited UNLV from scheduling more than one non-conference game. Well, obviously that wasn't going to be too good because the Arizona State and Louisiana Tech games were destined to Sam Boyd Stadium, which would be kind of a downer for people who have been anticipating this opening of Allegiant Stadium. So they worked with the Raiders, they worked with the Stadium Authority, and what they came up with is that they wanted to put that September 12th Arizona State game officially in Allegiant Stadium. That's a Pac-12 competitor. That's something that deserves to be in that big stadium. Louisiana Tech, well, they're not quite as lucky. That game still will be played at Sam Boyd Stadium. But there was something that they had to give up in order to make that happen. There was a concession that the Raiders wanted to have. And that occurs at the end of October when the Rebels play Colorado State University. What the Raiders wanted to do was move that Saturday game, it's a conference game, to Friday night instead. And the reason why they did that was because that weekend is the only one this whole fall season that both the Raiders and the Rebels are in town on the same weekend. So they wanted to have a little cushion there for moving the playing surfaces. And as you already know, the Rebels are going to be playing on artificial turf that will be on the ground level. And then the Raiders will be playing on natural grass in that large floating system that they are going to be growing the grass outside and then moving it on a field tray into the stadium for game days. Well, because the quick turnaround between Saturday and Sunday, they wanted to get a little extra cushion, so they asked for the CSU game to be moved to Friday, which they did.
And how much do you feel like the UNLV and Raiders relationship right now, that they're going to kind of run into these issues as they progress down the road with this partnership on the stadium? Or do you think that it's just something that had happened between the two entities playing there because this is the first season and they want to make sure that they get their spotlight games all set into the right order? And you know, obviously, like Rick said, the big Cal game is there. Is this something that you think you can foresee issues like this happening down the road? Or do you think it was just kind of organizing things out as this first season starts?
I don't know if it's going to happen down the road, but I know who's going to win the battle every time. I mean, that's a Raiders stadium, and I know UNLV, they wouldn't have got the stadium with the legislature if UNLV wasn't involved, but the Raiders are going to run that stadium. They were always going to win this battle. I know they would like extra time to move the grass in and the trays from, you know, a Colorado State game to when Brady's in town, but this is not going to be the only time in the history of that stadium where UNLV will play on a Saturday night. So this was the Raiders of reminding UNLV who's in charge. And they could have easily just given them the game on the 12th and moved their tray in and been fine. That's what they're going to have to do, I assume, many times over 30 years. But they wanted to let them know once again, we're in charge here and you're going to give something up. And obviously, it's an easy decision for UNLV. They would have given up probably two or three things to get the Arizona State game in Allegiant because you have to have that same, you know, you need that game in Allegiant. The Louisiana Tech game, you can get away, even though they're a very good team, they've been a much better program than UNLV. It's still Louisiana Tech. Arizona State, to put them in Sam Boyd as a Pac-12 would have been a horrible look for UNLV. So they were going to give up what they had to give up to get it in Allegiant. But make no bones about it. This is the Raiders saying we're in charge here. And if we're going to give you something, you're going to give us something back. We'll put you on Friday. That'll give us 24 hours even more to prepare for the Tampa Bay game, which will be national TV. But in the big picture, if this does happen down the road at any point, UNLV is always going to adhere to the Raiders. And the Raiders are always going to be in charge here.
Well, this brings me to another question based on the events happening there. And it's a fan question coming from Bulmaro Barraza Jr., Be the Gunner. He wants to know, because of the Garth Brooks concert, is that supposed to still go on? Is that a good sign for fans in the stadium for games, or will NFL rules be different? What do you know about this event? And it's still, I guess, being slated to take place as of now. But of course, in this current state of the world, we really don't know how many things will actually happen on schedule. But let's say this Garth Brooks concert right now, it still stands, I guess, is not being canceled. Is that right, Ed? Do you know about this?
I hope not, because I spent a fortune on the tickets for the wife's birthday. So I want that thing to go on. Are you kidding me? Garth Brooks needs to play. I don't know if a Garth Brooks concert, I mean, yeah, sure. If you get a Garth Brooks concert and they let everyone in and there doesn't seem to be many problems, yeah, I mean, I guess the NFL could look at that as kind of a you know, an example before they decide on what they're going to do. I'm still going to be surprised, just for the sake of what's going on, if 60,000 people are allowed into a Garth Brooks concert in August. I mean, I guess that would mean it's trending really, really well and things are better than people think, but I'm still waiting for my email telling me my concert tickets are done and I have to have a refund. I'm just, you know, I don't know. Maybe Rick has a different opinion. I cannot see in August, if everyone agrees that the NFL and college football is going to be in front of no fans, how can anyone believe Garth Brooks is going to be allowed to put 60,000 people in that stadium during the virus? I mean, you know, I'm almost surprised it hasn't been canceled yet. I know other, you know, just because my daughter has Harry Styles tickets in California, he hasn't canceled yet. So there are concerts of huge names that haven't been canceled yet, which sort of surprises me. But I will be on the huge surprise level if 60,000 people are watching Garth Brooks in August.
I would agree with you on that, Ed. And one of the things that plays into this, though, is that Garth Brooks really, really, really wants to open that stadium. That's one of the things that has been indicated, is that he definitely wants to do the performance. I agree, though. What it's going to look like is a completely different story. Would they cut the attendance in half and let half the people with tickets get in? I don't know how that's very fair. And would they just cancel it, or would they do a postponement? I think there's a lot of things that are on the table that haven't been realized yet, and we'll know a little bit more about this in the next few weeks.
And I was particularly curious because, just to stay on this for a moment here, Ohio State's AD Gene Smith, he had recently spoke out about there shouldn't be full stands, that there should be a model to have about 20,000 fans attend games. Now, obviously, the NFL is a much different animal, but if you're looking at the SEC and thinking about, okay, are they going to have full fans? Are they going to test their players? You know, will Ohio State have full games or not full games, how this is all going to play out. Will this kind of serve as what you think the NFL might do with the stadium when it comes to fans, Ed?
No, because I think they're two different entities. The NCAA doesn't control college football. The government, the governors and the states will. It'll be a state-by-state basis. We already know what they're staying in terms of the Cal State schools, which includes Mountain West teams and San Diego State, San Jose State, and Fresno State. That's a state-by-state basis. The NFL is going to decide, I think, much more independently than the NCAA will. Now, again, you still have state regulations with the NFL, but I you know, the NFL is 32 teams. They're all going to do exactly what the league says, and if it has to be in front of no fans, it will be. Colleges, you're going to get into conferences. You're going to get into the state. It's going to be a lot different. The SEC says we're playing on. The Big Ten, Penn State says we're playing on. We don't care how many members there are. The three teams in California and the Mountain West are saying, what about us? I think it's a much bigger mess in college football. You could have half the college football teams playing and half not. You know, when do kids come back to school? Many schools have said you're going to come back in mid-August. You're going to leave by Thanksgiving. Okay, does that mean you're still going to have football players on campus when no one's there? College is a much bigger mess, in my opinion, than the NFL. I think the NFL is going to go off, and I think it'll be in front of no fans to start. But that's a much easier transition. College could be a complete mess.
All right, let's go ahead on that note, take our quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about the budget here at Allegiant Stadium and some of the great things that you can expect to see as a fan, depending on how many get let in or if everyone gets let in. We don't know, but we're going to come right back and discuss all the great things you can see in Allegiant Stadium right here on the Vegas Nation podcast. This episode of Vegas Nation will be right back.
They say a healthy gut means a healthy you. Favor apple cider vinegar shots bottle this feeling into the convenience of a 2-ounce shot. Better digestion, stronger immune system, and the lowering of blood sugar levels are all just some of the benefits to shooting a daily Favor shot. Their proprietary blends are raw and organic and mixed with other functional ingredients to create a better tasting experience. First time shooters can go to drinkafavor.com.
Welcome back to the Vegas Nation podcast. It's your host here, Heidi Fang, with Ed Graney and Rick Velotta. We're discussing things with the stadium as it starts to become one large, big spectacle in the middle here of the desert and whether or not there will be fans there. We aren't certain yet, as we previously discussed. But Rick, you had something that you wanted to bring up here that you had recently seen on social media. Can you break down for us what that was?
Now, this was a proposal that was been made by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas. That's not the Dan Patrick that all the sports fans know. That's a different guy. But what he wanted to bring up was a plan to get games played before some fans in stadiums so that they're not empty. And the what he has proposed is that there be each venue has a lottery system set up, and they only fill seats that fulfill the social distancing requirements. In other words, not every row is going to be filled. Not every seat is going to be filled. Groups that usually go together and then who live together can sit together, but they're going to be separated by a pretty healthy distance from some of the other fans that are there. One of the things he's recommended is that people who are getting tickets for some of these things not be allowed to do the whole season, but maybe one or two games during the entire season so that everybody has the opportunity to get in. And then when it comes to playoff time, maybe we're to a point where we're seeing a different outlook as to how many people can go in. There might be some vaccines out there. I've heard that that's still quite a ways away, but at the same time, you got to hope, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what the human race does. We hope and we live for those hopes to maybe become a reality. Some of the things that I wanted to get in here also is just about in terms of budget and making the stadium a reality. The Raiders right now, they had, you know, based a lot of the financing off of this hotel tax, but right now that's based at zero. I know that there's a reserve. We've seen those great articles that you put out and Mick Akers puts out on the Review Journal explaining how they're still able to fund this from that perspective. But if unforeseen things happen, if there are things that come up, like issue with the escalators or elevators that I heard yesterday during the meeting that aren't, you know, quite to code yet and aren't quite completed, with most of the budget already spent on the stadium, what should happen if there are unforeseen things that come up?
Well, that would be a big problem. And certainly the big hole that exists there in terms of funding is going to be an issue that's going to be with the stadium authority for probably the next several years, because we are going to be behind for a while. Obviously, the months of March were affected. April and May are probably going to be close to zero. Well, there'll be some revenue, but not anything significant. And then when people do start coming back to Las Vegas, they're going to have, it's going to be a couple of different problems. One, we're not expecting a lot of people to come back in any large numbers. And two, once they do come back, people are going to be trying to get into these resorts at a discounted rate. So obviously that means that the tax on those discounted rates is not going to be as high as it probably would have been. So this is going to probably go on for quite some time. And the way the financing has been set up by the stadium authority is to have what they call a waterfall financing. And that is that the most important stuff is done first. In other words, the bond payments, that's going to be paid for first. And then if there's something left over, it waterfalls into another fund and then keeps going on down until the very last priority is financed. Unfortunately for UNLV, that's they're towards the bottom of that that waterfall. And what that means is that some of the revenue that they were expecting to get for some of the, you know, the revenue they would have gotten from events at Sam Boyd Stadium, that's not going to happen, at least for a while. $3.5 million a year is what they were anticipating to get over a course of several years, I think about 10 years, but that's not going to be financed directly. To the point that you made, Heidi, the budget part of it that does the budget part of this that finances some of the improvements to the stadium is also on the lower tier. And that's because it just doesn't have the same priority. We're not expecting to see any big modifications to the stadium when it's new. Presumably that's all going to be just fine going in. But the fact is that any improvements that are going to be made are going to have to be put on hold for a while because there's not going to be that capital expense budget in place either. That's one of the lower priorities.
So, Ed, when you think of it in terms of being a UNLV and how Rick was just explaining that this is going to be revenue down, I mean, what does this do for them this season as, you know, we start to look at the football season coming closer and everything that was supposed to happen, but now it's not happening? And in terms of revenue, what does this mean for UNLV?
Well, it's never a good thing when you're a group of five when revenue is being cut or what revenue you're planned on doesn't come to fruition. I mean, Mountain West barely has a TV contract to get revenue off of. I mean, especially comparable to Power Fives. It's all relative. I mean, there are Power Fives, as amazing this is, there are Power Fives in this country cutting sports right now based on, again, how much it costs to run their athletics in those schools. But for a school like UNLV, who doesn't come close to budgets of Power Fives and really has to save every penny and now are making cuts across the board in athletics, it's not good. Anytime, you know, there's not revenue streams that you counted on at the beginning of the year, it hurts a group of five school like UNLV. So it's a long way back for them, like it will be most group of fives from this pandemic and budget crisis. And you just do your best. You hope that sports don't have to be cut. That's happening a lot around America. Many more Olympic sports were cut this week at group of fives. You hope they don't have to get to that point. But they're going to have to do something. You know, hard cuts are going to have to be made at a school like UNLV when this is said and done. And I think they'll do everything to save sports. But nothing will surprise me. This has been a really bad hit on a school like UNLV. And now when you think about playing Cal or Arizona State, are they in front of no fans? You're losing revenue on concessions. You're losing revenue everywhere. So none of this is good right now for a school like UNLV or really any school. Like I said, there are powerful Power Fives in this country losing money and cutting sports. So this has not been good for anyone in collegiate athletics.
And we know that the COVID is still something that, you know, the workers have been fighting off. We've seen the signs all around the stadium. And before you even go in, there's banners draped all around the fences outside, Rick. So I just wanted to ask, you know, I know that Mortensen McCarthy has spoken out a lot about these cases and the measures that they're taking and how the workers are coming in different shifts. But is there anything that you think would bring this construction at this point to a halt should there be more cases that arise at the stadium?
I think that there's probably just too much momentum and a very short timeline for a substantial completion of the project for anything to stop it now. Governor Sisolak has made it quite clear that this is an essential business, and I think that we should all be you know, worried about some of these cases that appear. And every time I see an update and seeing how many more people have either caught the virus or they have perished from the virus, it makes me very sad. And certainly this is something that the union people have also recognized, that they are losing some of their colleagues with this pandemic. And certainly the numbers are growing. Not just at that construction site, but all around the state. But at this point in time, I don't see any reason why this would be shut down.
Okay, so let's get into some of the things that are positive here that are going in the stadium, some things that fans want to know about. First of all, I think a lot of concern since we've posted some drone video and also some still photos of the top of Allegiant Stadium. A lot of people thought the roof was going to be transparent. Now, when you look at it from the top looking down, it doesn't appear that way. But I have seen pictures inside that do show the transparency. So can you reassure fans here, Rick, about one thing, the roof and how it works, and then also they're wondering about the torch, where that goes, and just, you know, the Al Davis torch, the eternal flame, if it will in fact be there. I know that it will be, but just reassure everybody for us.
sure. The you know, from the very start, we've reported that the roof was going to be translucent. That's a lot different than transparent. The design is to let the light come in so that the field can be illuminated, so to speak, by the sunlight. But you don't want that direct sunlight coming in either. So having this kind of a shielding there, so to speak, if you're sitting inside the stadium, you're not going to be seeing any planes overhead. It's just not that type of a surface. But instead, light will be able to come in. So people who thought it was going to be transparent are mistaken. It's going to be translucent. So as far as the torch is concerned, that 85-foot tall torch that is a memorial to Al Davis, that's still under construction. There's still some scaffolding around it at this time. It's the largest 3D printed object in the world. Just to put everybody's mind at ease, there's not a real flame that's going to be inside there. It's going to be something that's more of an artificial type of a setup, but it will be there at the very the north end of the stadium, looking out over the Las Vegas Strip. When those doors are opened, you'll be able to see the torch as well as the opening in that side of the stadium, and then the strip beyond that. Should be quite an amazing sight, especially in some of those Sunday evening games when it starts to get dark. It's going to be just stunning for people who are sitting inside the stadium to be able to see that torch going and to see the lights coming up on the strip behind it.
All right, we have just a couple more questions from fans, one coming from Gabriel Gonzalez, and he wants to know, in terms of MMA, will they host John Jones versus Francis Ngannou or John Jones versus Israel Adesanya there as their first MMA event? I found that one interesting because I never assumed it would be John Jones at all. I think it would be probably the likes of someone like Conor McGregor headlining that card. But John Jones, he's a polarizing character in MMA, so maybe we see him. Ed, what are your thoughts on that?
Hold on a second. I'm still writing down translucent. I'm going to use that in a column this week.
And Harry Styles. Translucent and Harry Styles.
Translucent and Harry Styles. It'll be good read. You know, I agree with you. I mean, John Jones is kind of a dynamic figure. He's been very controversial. He's had his issues. But it's almost like Garth Brooks, Heidi. It's, you know, I heard names early on for concerts. I heard Garth Brooks, and then I had heard Ed Sheeran. Now, I love Ed Sheeran, but Garth Brooks is Garth Brooks. I think people like John Jones, but Conor McGregor is Conor McGregor. So I think my preference, if I was an MMA fan, would be Conor McGregor. I think he's just the biggest name, no matter, you know, how long he's fought or the last time he's fought or whatever. I think he's just a big name. Certain names kind of belong on the top of the marquee. And if I'm choosing between one of, you know, MMA far better than I do, I would choose Conor McGregor, much like I would choose Garth Brooks over Ed Sheeran. And I like both of them. I mean, I think when you're going into this kind of stadium, at least early on, and you're talking about the first concert or the first MMA event, you've got to have a high, high name on that marquee. And I would assume, like I said, you would know better than I, McGregor would be more of a light, you know, name in the lights name than John Jones would.
I'd quickly like to bring our producer, Larry Mir, into this. I know he's sitting there on the other line. And if you are hearing me, Larry, would you bring in McGregor or Jones first?
Definitely Conor McGregor. I think John Jones should be in an institution somewhere.
There you go. Awesome. Thank you, Larry. So last question is, I know you all have to get going. The governor is speaking here in about 15 minutes, so we have to get ready for that. But the parking situation right now at Allegiant Stadium, do you have any news for us right now, Rick, on how the parking or the monorail transportation to the stadium, if there's anything new since the last time we spoke on this?
There's not been anything particularly new. The satellite parking spaces are still in play. From what I understand, some of those surfaces are being paved so that they have a fresh asphalt there for people to show up and maybe do some tailgating before they go to the game. The plan all along has been to shuttle bus people to the stadium prior to the game. As far as the monorail is concerned, that's kind of shut down at this particular time. The idea, of course, was to extend that line all the way to Mandalay Bay from the MGM Grand, but that also has been put on hold simply because of the finances right now.
Okay, so that'll do it for us here on this special edition of the Vegas Nation Stadium podcast here, and we'll hope to do this again maybe next month at some point. I don't know, Rick, are we expecting another stadium authority meeting coming up soon? When did they decide to reconvene?
They're going to reconvene in July. It wouldn't surprise me if they had a special meeting, but I just kind of their track record would suggest that July is going to be it. So that will be at about 2 weeks prior to the opening.
All right. So the next time that they meet, we're going to have to do this again just to update everybody on anything new that we hear and what's happening. And these life-size screens, we didn't even get into that. I wanted to talk about those TV screens. There's supposedly five of them that you tweeted are as big as cars.
Hey Heidi, Joe, can we ask Rick if his bottom level beer room is open yet?
Oh, they have not said specifically that to be open. I would have to hope that that's high on the priority list. I'll have to get back to you on that.
We've been waiting years for it, my friend. We've been waiting years for it.
This is stuff I am very curious about. We're going to have to talk more about this for sure. So we'll come back and do that sometime here on this Vegas Nation podcast brought to you by Favor, drinkafavor.com. I'd like to thank Rick Velotta for coming on, as well as Ed Graney, to do this special edition podcast. You can keep up with all of their work that they're doing on reviewjournal.com or on vegasnation.com for anything Raiders related, as well as following everything on the Vegas Nation app and on your favorite social media platforms at Vegas Nation. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you are listening. For Ed Graney, for Rick Velotta, I'm Heidi Fang. We'll be back soon.